Yes, I am concerned about Joe Musgrove. And that's not just the general Padres fan feeling of dread that we always get when anybody heads to the injured list. I'm more concerned for Joe than I even was for you, Darvish. Welcome back. Final hour of Ben and Woods coming up. I will say that Mike Schilt has not lied to us.
True.
Yet. But you can't be relentingly positive without eventually stretching the truth a little bit.
I wouldn't say lie, but I, you know, the throwing up and in will be addressed. When?
when they classified Joe's trip to the injured list as precautionary. Not a huge deal, could have probably gone if we needed him. We're just nipping this in the bud and making sure everything is good. If he hadn't already been struggling, though, you know, off and on for the first month of the season, maybe I would buy that pretty easily, going, yeah, okay, something popped up, feels not great, let's just give it a couple of weeks, he'll be fine. The fact that he was injured at the end of last season, then came in and started struggling this year, and you use the words elbow inflammation. We also heard triceps tendonitis, but we heard elbow inflammation. That is way more concerning than neck strain, which was when Yu Darvish's trip to the injured list. Neck strains are incredibly painful and annoying. But for a pitcher, that's just get some rest. It'll be fine. Elbow inflammation is always the first, or almost always, the first red flag on the way to, I don't even want to say.
No, don't say it.
But we're all thinking.
I don't know. I mean, I think,
how can you not with the rash of those type of injuries going around pitching in Major League Baseball right now?
The kid, Nick Pivetta, had the same thing. He's coming back this week. Looked really good for the Red Sox. Guys' elbows do get inflamed. They do. And they are able to come back and pitch. It's not. Now, again, I think the tone would be a little. Now, I say this, and I don't want to jinx this. I'm like knocking on everything around me. I don't want to jinx it. But again, I really don't have any control over Joe Musgrove's medicals. Just remember that. I just get the sense that, because Joe talked about it too. Again, they don't think it's that serious right now. So I'm going to choose to believe them that it's not that serious right now.
You'd expect to hear a little more like, we're just not sure. We're waiting on some testing. We wanted to get a couple of second opinions.
Correct.
Then you'd be a little more concerned.
Yeah.
The only reason why I'm not sure is that unrelenting optimism of Mike Schilt may be somewhat softening the picture here a little bit. I don't know if that's true or not.
And listen, there's a lot of folks in this fan base that have given up on Joe Musgrove, and he had a really nice start last week when I was at Disneyland, and he had a really, really nice start. Looked vintage. And I think that's the bummer, is finally starts to put something together. Now the elbow's inflamed, and you know, that's when you don't want to go like two steps back, right? Because you've just traded for Arias. You're probably going to need another arm at some point. You got to make sure you have the prospect capital to do it. I think they still do. But yeah, this is when it gets a little dicey.
If you didn't hear it, here's what Mike Schilt said after yesterday's game about Musgrove and the IL stint.
Yeah, timeline TBD. We think it's very similar to Darvish's situation, where it's not a scheduled breather, but a chance to get a breather, you know, through a bullpen. Could have gotten through it, could have answered the bell on Tuesday. Just felt like there's some inflammation in there that's not quite, you know, where we wanted to be. And just a good chance for him to get a little bit of a reset and a little bit of a blow. So don't feel like it's anything overly serious, but there is some inflammation in there that we want to get out and make sure that he's feeling good consistently.
So Margie in the chat says, Musgrove will need TJ. It's been apparent since spring training. So did you miss the start last week where he was, you know, again, if you
velocity was up last week,
yeah, if you
things
need,
were good.
If you've needed TJ since before opening day, I doubt very much, you know, you're going to be able to go out and pitch with that elbow, throwing 95 miles an hour and sliders and everything else. So again, I have no choice but to choose to believe what Mike Schilt says and what Joe says. So yeah, I hopefully it's nothing serious. You know, listen, you need a stable of guys down there that can get out. And it's a really good time for guys like Randy Vasquez and Johnny Brito and potentially Adrian Morejon to step up and be big leaguers and get outs and let your offense do some work for you. Let your defense make some plays for you because, you know, this is how a good team is built, man. And they got to prove something.
The peripherals on Randy Vasquez have been outstanding. The stuff plus,
yeah.
The movement. Has he translated that into a lot of big league success yet? No. Is the potential there? Yeah, I hope so. And hopefully he takes this opportunity and runs with it. All right, we have enough like material. We could probably do a double Rindle report today. So I'll just let Paulie steer us for the next few minutes
and get things started here with our edition today's edition of the Rindle Report.
Now tuned into the greatest.
Welcome to the Rindle Report. With Paul Rindle.
Hi, Paul.
All right.
Two stories from the world of sports that we haven't gotten to yet.
We'll start off in Major League Baseball.
And one story that you didn't know you needed.
Are you laughing, biatch?
It's the Rindle Report.
Hey, Paul, how you doing?
Okay, how are you?
On 97.3 The Fan.
Are you ready to bless the mood? I need some help, please.
That was good.
Can I get a hoy? Oh, yeah.
All right.
All right, indeed.
Good morning, my friends.
Morning.
It's the Rindle Report, and it's brought to you by the Frozen Ropes Summer Baseball League. The Frozen Ropes is now registering ballplayers ages 6 through 12. Go to sandiegofrozenropes.com for more information.
Yeah. Manny hit a frozen rope
on
Friday. Oh, wow.
You like frozen ropes?
I love frozen ropes.
All right, we will start off. We'll start off on the local news here. We mentioned it very early in the show. Wanted to give Woodsy a little more chance to expand on the end of the San Diego Seals season. So Friday night they played here in San Diego, took the L, and that put them in a best of three series up against the ropes. Yesterday had to travel to Albany and they fell 13-10. Season over.
Lost 14-12 Friday night. It was horrible. It was
a comeback, right?
Yeah, a huge comeback in the fourth. We were one goal away. And it just sort of horrific. We had guys in the penalty box that had not been in the penalty box all year. And they called every ticky-tack penalty. They were trying to call major penalties that weren't majors. They had to review them. It was a really horribly run and officiated game. That being said, we didn't get the job done. And I'm really bummed about it. But it was fun. I mean, we only lost a couple times at home all year, which is what you dream of. And just got to retool. That's what they'll do. And they made the playoffs every single year they've been here. So I'm super happy with the direction of the team. I hope to be invited back to do PA next year. I love it. My kid, Bo, is so into lacrosse now and going to Seals camp in a couple weeks. Like, it's certainly a part of the fabric of our lives. And the people that showed up at Pechanga all year were nuts. It was a crazy, crazy environment. And it's really grown. And I love those guys. I love them. I really do. They're just the most hardworking athletes I know.
Well, that was a very Mike Schilt-esque take on another disappointing playoff exit for the Seals. You probably have more talent than any other team in the NLL and have yet to turn it into a title.
I mean, every guy you mention, you're like, oh, he's like the best in the league at his job. This guy, future Hall of Famer. Guy in the league.
You know, we have the best face-off guy in the world. Albany has the second best. And they were locked. And so it basically went 50-50. So it didn't really matter. You know what I mean? Kind of cancel each other out. It was gnarly, though. I mean, it was. They're the biggest.
Is anyone on the hot seat? Are you on the hot seat?
I don't think so.
You don't think so?
No. I mean, where else are you going to find somebody to come down and do what I do? You know what I mean?
Maybe you need to do less.
No, I will not. I need to do more. Okay. I take responsibility for Friday
maybe
night.
Maybe you are on the hot seat then. If
maybe
you're
I
taking
am.
Responsibility.
That's fine.
Someone needs to take the fall.
Nobody's
there
has taking
to be
any falls.
Blame guy.
We're just going to retool. We'll get better.
All right. Fair enough.
Need to get a little faster. You know, get a little bigger. We'll be all right.
I have some experience in goal now.
You do.
And I'm pretty big.
You
so
do.
Even after the weight loss.
That's true.
Just let me know if they need me.
All right, I will.
Yeah.
Oh, so sad.
Don't hold your breath, though.
I'm so sad.
All right. In the NBA playoffs continuing, we saw the Cavaliers take down the Magic yesterday to win their first round series in the Eastern Conference. Donovan Mitchell put the team on his back again. 39 points. Tonight, we've got a doubleheader on TNT. It's going to start with the Knicks hosting the Pacers, game one of the Eastern Conference semifinals matchup there. And then game two in the Western Conference semifinals, the Nuggets hosting the Timberwolves. And Minnesota actually came into Denver on Saturday night, I believe, and kind of pushed Denver around, had their way. And so they have the one Denver looking to even the series up tonight. They tip off at 7 o'clock.
It's game what?
Game two. In game that two. One. There game are, one in the Knicks.
There Pacers. Are so many good players in the NBA now. Donovan Mitchell, you mentioned, he had 39 after 50 in a Game 6 loss. But Paolo Banchero, the Magic, they're a young and upcoming team. They're out now, but they're going to be a team to watch in the future. It just turns teams like, yeah, Anthony Davis and LeBron are great. You know, Kawhi was hurt. They got eliminated over the weekend. Other teams now have superstars. Anthony Edwards, you know, there's, you know, Luka Doncic is still a very young player.
Luka Doncic.
Luka Doncic is still a very young player for the Mavs as they go on. Every team seems to have superstars now. Jalen Brunson, I mean, there are so many great players now in the NBA. This may be the best the NBA has ever been at this moment. So many good teams.
I'm out of your mind. It's better than it's ever been.
It could be.
Almost unwatchable.
Wrong.
It's almost unwatchable. It is almost. I put on some of the pages.
People were compare Anthony Edwards to Michael Jordan this week. And when Michael Jordan played, there were so many bad teams. You forget how many, like, forgettable,
there's so
terrible
many bad teams now.
No,
too.
They're not. Yes, there's more good teams than ever in the NBA. There's more good. There's like the 10 good teams in the Western Conference this year.
I tried so hard to watch it. It's unwatchable to me. Jack three, run down the court. Jack three, run down the court. Jack three.
You're just not watching the right. I
guess not. Because I'm this guy. How far is the 3-point line?
23 feet.
Yeah. I'm watching guys jack 30 footers and bricking them, and then running half. I watched 5 minutes of the Pacers game the other night. I was like, this is unwatchable for me. That's just my opinion. I know people love the NBA. I wish I did. I cannot watch it anymore. And now, listen, with the playoffs being here, you know, getting a little bit more serious, see the defense step up a little bit in the bigger series, maybe it'll be a little bit better.
It's better in the playoffs, yes.
Yeah.
They joke about it with their commercials, like playoff, and they're going, it's not a thing. It's totally a thing. Playoff basketball is just better.
Mm.
I had fun watching. I watched a little bit of the Nuggets and Timberwolves game on Saturday. I mean, seeing big guys like Rudy Gobert and Jokic were just going at it.
That's good.
In the paint. That was fun to watch. Jokic, he's a freak.
He's a beast.
He is a freak. The way that he shouldn't be as limber and as good as he is, because he just kind of moves around slow, but he's got some art to it. It's fun to watch. But all right, finally, Ben, you had some questions about.
I googled this yesterday. Yes, I googled it just to see, like, Wikipedia what it had to say about this.
Well, you tell me what's going on between Kendrick Lamar and Drake.
I still don't understand. I certainly they're like coming back and forth with diss tracks, which are basically songs that they write that
yes.
criticize the other,
yes.
like specifically. And there are some gnarly accusations, like Kendrick has accused Drake of being a pedophile like twice in two different songs. I don't know how they write them this fast, if they had already been prepared to drop
them. I think they were already prepared.
Dropping them back and forth. I don't know if this is a bit that they're doing, like just to drum up some attention, or if this is legitimate beef between the two.
I'll try to give you the best.
And no one can even explain why it even started, for the most part. That they were on good terms, and like someone made a joke and took it the wrong way, and then this has devolved into a decade of hatred. I just don't understand.
I'll try to give you the best too long didn't read version to my capabilities here. Drake has been around for a while and has always been criticized and as kind of thought of as a bit of a phony. I mean, he's a upper middle class kid from Toronto who got his start as an actor on Degrassi, and then he's rapping about how hard his lifestyle is, and people are like, really?
A little bit of a poser, right?
Okay, like yeah. Kendrick Lamar, for example, grew up in the streets of Compton.
Right.
He feels a little bit differently. That, like, he's looking at Drake's success and going, really? So they've been going at it for, yeah, like you said, Ben, like over 10 years. And recently, Drake kind of threw some shots at Kendrick. J. Cole released a new album about a month ago and had a diss track for Kendrick Lamar.
Yes.
Kind of siding with Drake there.
Then he rescinded it the next day.
Like 2 days later, yeah. He was at a festival in Charlotte and he goes, you know what? I want that album or that song taken
off
the album.
Took it off the record. It was a great song.
Now, I think he might have gotten wind of some of the ammunition that Kendrick Lamar had, and he goes, you know what? I don't want any part of this. And just in the last like 4 or 5 days, Drake had a song that came out, his diss track, and then Kendrick came back with not one, not two, but three diss tracks in like a 48-hour span. Somebody like texted me, oh, another one came out. I'm like, oh, yeah, I heard it this morning. No. Another one came out. And like you said, the accusations are
I know nothing about any of this, but it seems as though, like, Kendrick told Drake, hey, if you don't start anything, we'll let it go. But if you do anything, I've got everything standing by. And when Drake, like, released his, Kendrick just opened the vault and go, okay, boom, here it all is. Yeah. You asked for it, Kendrick had a line now laying it out for everybody.
Quit telling lies about me, and I won't tell truths about you.
Hmm.
And some of the truths are
It feels like anybody crazy. Who's anybody's on Kendrick's side.
Yes.
Like, does Drake have anybody left on his side?
He's got people allegedly in his own crew, his own team, that are leaking. Count. He's got a mole, like, giving Kendrick Lamar all this information.
It's bad for Drake.
There's one line. I mean, I don't know if she'd play it or not.
Probably not. If you had to guess.
Yeah, probably not. That's good. I'll play for you guys after the break.
It's, you know, and
Drake responded. The most recent is Drake responded with a song last night.
He did.
Musicians, of course, can do diss tracks. What do we have, though? Could we do a diss show?
A diss podcast. I've done plenty of those.
Diss podcasts.
Some girl tweeted, Marcelo Arguello said, another track? This is exhausting. No wonder they used to actually just kill each other.
Yes.
Which they did. That's when it was serious.
I wouldn't rule that out anymore, but yeah, if this was like 1996, somebody would be dead by now.
Yeah, it sucks. That's not what you want. And so it's all, you know, it's all fun and games until that happens. Like, I loved Hit 'Em Up. From Tupac, I thought, I was like, I've never heard anything like this in my life, ever. I'd never heard anything like that. And then, you know, he died, and Biggie died, and it was terrible. So I don't want any of these guys to die. I don't think, you know, and you don't want to keep pushing the envelope.
Well, right? I don't want to die, so let's just be nice to everyone.
Let's be nice.
All the time.
No enemies.
That's usually my philosophy. Be nice. Don't start anything. That's our Rindel Report. Good job, Paulie.
Hey, thanks.
All right, we're going to take a quick timeout. We'll come back, check traffic when we return. The Cubs series, the Dodgers coming to town this weekend. Very big week for your San Diego Padres. We'll take a little look ahead next with Bennett Woods on San Diego's number one sports station, 97.3 The Fan. Tune in every Thursday at 10 a.m. for 97.3 The Fan's commercial-free Padres Roundtable featuring Bennett Woods, Annie and Elston, and Gwen and Chris, presented by San Diego Roundtable Pizza. For takeout or delivery, go to San Diego Roundtable or go to roundtablepizza.com. Roundtable, the last honest pizza. We continued our conversation about the NBA a little bit during the break, and Paulie mentioned how the Golden State Warriors, with their three-point shooting prowess, undoubtedly, you know, you said broke the game, but they certainly changed the equation. It was really one of the most obvious strategic developments in sports in the last half century. 3 points are worth 50% more than 2 points. So you don't have to make nearly as many three-pointers to be successful and make it worthwhile to shoot threes. So teams started shooting a heck of a lot more three-pointers. And as that happened, guess what? More kids, as they were coming up, started practicing longer and longer threes to get good at it. And you have more players, you know, copying the Steph Curry model. The ultimate success story in all of it, though, is not in the men's game. It's in the women's game. It's Caitlin Clark, who has absolutely continued to just turn that entire sport on its ear. She had her first WNBA preseason game over the weekend. Preseason WNBA game on the road, and they sold out the entire arena in the Dallas area for that game.
Did Doug Gottlieb ever fix her shot? Or
I don't think so, but she had 21 in her NBA preseason. I don't even know how many minutes she played. 21 points.
Probably would have had 40 if she had let Doug get his, you know, hands in the dough there and start working on that shot.
But Caitlin Clark is a product of what the Golden State Warriors kind of did and changed in basketball. The longer and better you are at shooting, the more valuable of a player you have become. So we see a lot of that, but I find it very entertaining to watch Steph, to watch her, to see guys be able to throw the ball in a basket from 30 feet away from the basket. will never cease to impress me.
I don't have a rooting interest, and that is really what murders me, I think, with the whole thing. I really don't. I don't have a rooting interest, and I don't. You know, as far as college basketball, I watch more Aztecs basketball games than anything. So, like, if Jaden Ledee got drafted by the Knicks, I might be a Knicks fan. You know what I mean?
Just like, looking unlikely after he wasn't even invited to the draft combine.
So I think that's a big part of it for me, too. I know I sound like an old head when I say this. I know there's talent. I know they're the most talented they've ever been. I feel the same way about baseball. And, you know, I yell at the old heads in baseball that are like, let's bond and let's do this. I'm like, no, we don't do that anymore, right? Baseball has kind of come back the last couple of years to being a more palatable view, more palatable watch. And I do think those new rules have helped tremendously. I don't even care about joining super teams, and I don't care about any of that. That's not what it is for me. I got spoiled. I got spoiled living in Chicago during Jordan's run. I got spoiled. That's exactly what happened. And
as great as that team was, and that was a super team.
Those teams, not that
okay,
team.
Those six. Generally the same players. They had a couple of
that franchise.
People who came in and out.
The rest of the NBA was not.
But that
as
was
good as
a super
now.
Team back then with Michael Jordan and Scottie Pippen. You know, and then
and Bill Cartwright,
yeah.
And Horace Grant,
but they were a super team. Who did they beat during those runs?
Reggie Miller and the Pacers. I mean, that's the thing is, and see,
Reggie Miller, a great shooter, but those Pacers teams were not great.
They were,
and the Utah Jazz teams they would beat in the finals, not great.
Oh my God, how do you say that? Karl Malone and John Stockton together, and I mean, it was crazy, and there was gnarly defense, like. That to me was the golden era because I was in it. I was just in it. If it was here and it was the San Diego Monarchs, I'd be all on board. I'd be all about it. But I don't have a rooting interest at all. And I know I sound like an old head when I say that. But you doing the bit of, oh, Jordan played against plumbers is ridiculous. Ridiculous. Stockton and those guys were nasty. They were nasty. He'd get throat punched on a drive to the hoop. I mean, it was gnarly. Like the Pistons,
the Jazz wouldn't win a playoff series in today's NBA.
Fine, Babe Ruth couldn't hit. You know, Tyler Glasnow.
I think the Showtime Lakers would struggle against the kind of teams of today.
They probably would. They probably would.
Basketball is better today. Players are better today.
No, players are better today. The product that I watch is not the same for me. That's just what I'm saying.
Honestly, I disagree. The officiating changes, which, you know, stop allowing the hand checks on defense to allow offensive players to do their thing. Same thing with the NFL, where they stop letting defensive backs, you know, chuck as much and hit the guys. It allows the skill players, the quarterbacks, the receivers, the shooters, the drivers, to do their impressive things that really excite the fans and I think make the product better. Football is better, basketball is better, and now finally baseball is becoming better because of the pitch clock and the changes they are making. Baseball resisted the longest to actually improve their product, different rules or the enforcement of the rules that they already have. They're just following the lead of sports like basketball and football, who have already done the things to try to elevate their product to make it the best product possible. The NFL never stops. You're going to see the kickoffs changing next year. They're just trying to make everything more entertaining and exciting, and they continue to tinker with it until they, you know, hopefully get it right someday.
It's like if you told pitchers you can only throw fastballs, right? Like, just throw heaters. And let's see what these guys can do. That's what it's like to me.
I disagree. Like Ricardo in the chat said, players are not better. They're more athletic, but not better.
They're so good.
Soft as hell now. I can barely watch anymore. You make it seem as though basketball is supposed to be a sport of physicality. The rules state you can't touch anybody in basketball. It's right there in the rules. Every single play from those Knicks teams and those 80s and 90s defensive teams, they're all illegal. They just weren't called back
then.
Totally illegal.
Now, you want to make that argument for football, like, oh, they might as well just play flag football? Yeah, there's a bit of an argument to that because the hits are...
And you can't hit the quarterback at all.
You can't touch the quarterback. That has absolutely changed.
And again, I will change my perspective almost guaranteed if we get a team here. It's a guaranteed 180. Guaranteed. I have no rooting
interest.
It's because
you'll follow it closer. You'll appreciate
it more as
you watch it more. I guarantee you would, and it's fine. You don't have to. We're not relying on you. I mean, we barely talk any basketball, which is understandable. We got a baseball team We're going to talk more baseball when we come back, but I just wanted to finish off that discussion because we are passionate about it. We're kind of dug in on our sides on that one, and we're probably not going to see eye to eye, at least for the time being.
Somebody wants to know who would win one-on-one pickup, me v. you.
That would be fun to watch.
I got that all day. It's not even close.
Probably Woods.
Not probably.
When was the last time you played any basketball?
Yesterday.
Oh, really?
Bo plays every day. I shoot and play with him every day. Yeah. Now he's 6 and I dominate him. But you got some size.
Did you play any basketball growing up?
Me and I played in the YMCA league.
You did, okay.
Yeah, I won most improved player, which means biggest turd.
Yeah, so I run best most improved spirit. 7th grade basketball, middle school. Most
me
improved.
And you me and Ben against Paul?
Ooh. Yeah, Paulie's definitely way better, but 2-on-1.
2-on-1 is tough.
Hard to do. You can only guard one of them.
That's right. I like this.
We can make that happen.
My knees hurt already.
We'll come back.
Would like to take Ben 1-on-1, though.
Back to baseball
and play basketball.
And our Padres week ahead when we return with Bennett Woods on 97.3 The Fan. This hour, Bennett Woods brought to you by the Kraft Taco in Sorrento Valley. Kraft Taco has some of the best quality tacos in all of San Diego. Go to thecrafttaco.com. Take a look at there today, thecrafttaco.com. I received a lot of tweets and comments over the weekend about run differential, but I stayed silent through the entire weekend. I'm not going down that road again much. Explain when we come back after traffic here on 97.3 The Fan.
They're wearing you out for
I think people misunderstand that I'm rooting for run differential. I could care less what the team's run differential is.
Couldn't you?
I want them to win games. Last year,
you really liked the run.
Last year, I thought the run differential was. I thought the run differential was going to show you that this is a better team, and they are eventually going to find their level, as most teams do, and they were going to eventually, be several games above 500 and make the playoffs.
You're such a math guy.
Just because it didn't happen doesn't mean true.
But you're such a math guy, and you're so smart. That's why I wanted to hit you over the head with a frying pan last year, because you would come in and argue, but they're plus 20. I'm like, they scored 14 runs in one game. Then they scored 9. The win is worth the same amount if you win by 1 or if you win by 30.
You are correct.
You only get one credit for one win.
But ultimately,
me over to Ben. What's
the best way to evaluate an offense in baseball?
Wins and losses. Honestly, that's the what I've come up with.
But no, just
last
offense.
Last year broke me.
Just
too.
Offense. Of all the stats, you got batting average,
right.
OBP, slugging
run
percentage,
scored,
OPS,
run score.
Run score.
I know.
Isn't that the most important stat you can put up as an offense? It doesn't matter how you get them. You just need to get them, because the more runs you score, the more likely you are to win a game. Similarly. For a pitching staff, the most important stat is runs allowed.
Yeah.
It's not ERA. Unearned runs count against you just as much.
Correct.
So as a team, you're trying to prevent as many runs as possible while scoring as many runs as possible.
But if you're sitting at 500 and you've got a plus 42 run differential, are you a good team or a bad team? You're a 500 team. That's what you are. You're a little bit of both, because you have to take into account the feast or famine, which you weren't last year.
And we are a little bit going down that road again.
We are.
Because once again, now after the addition of Luis Arraez, obviously the Padres had a good weekend. They have scored the second most runs in baseball this year. 187 runs.
Yeah.
That is second only to the Los Angeles Dodgers, who have scored 197 runs. The offense has been good. And the pitching, while it hasn't been nearly as good, they're more toward the middle to bottom half of baseball and 176 runs allowed. Their run differential of plus 11 tells you they should be a couple of games above 500, not a game below 500
Correct.
At this point.
Yeah,
but
that's how you feel.
Here we are again, and they are once again not quite performing up to the level of what their offense and defense slash pitching say they should be performing up to. Last year, we kind of blamed Bob Melvin as the manager. They're not winning one-run games. This year, they're not nearly as bad as they were. I think, their one-run game record this year is, at this point, it's been a while, 3-4 in one-run games and 1-0 in extra inning games. Not like last year when they were
Correct.
Just abysmally bad in those games. They've been okay in the close games. They've had a couple of games where they've blown people out. They haven't gotten blown out a lot. I think yesterday, was that the worst loss they've suffered all year?
I think so.
It was. By seven runs was probably the biggest margin of defeat that they've had all season long. They don't get blown out much. They do occasionally erupt on the other teams, and they've done okay in close games. To me, that tells you this should be a winning team. Somehow they're not still.
Now, the crazy thing is you look at Oakland, right? So Oakland is sitting with a minus 23 run differential, Benny, and they are 17-18, which is insane. We're 18-19. You basically have the exact same winning percentage as the Oakland Athletics right now. Again, we're going to go down that road of, like, I don't know what to make of this team.
I mean, the Twins, with a essentially the same run differential as the Padres, they're plus 13. They're five games above 500.
Correct.
There's definitely ways to maximize your runs scored and your runs given up. And the Padres have not done that very well season plus.
Correct. And I just think it's such a tired thing, but just consistency. It's just consistency.
I think that, like, is important.
It is.
The Padres have won. So they've played 12 series now this year.
Yeah.
After winning two out of three from the Arizona Diamondbacks, they've won five series, they've lost four series, and they've split three series. So they have a winning series record. Mike Schilt told us last week, it doesn't matter. Winning streaks don't matter. You just win series. Yeah. And if you win more series than you lose, you're going to have a winning record. Well, here we are. The Padres have won more series than they've lost.
That's correct.
And they still have a losing record.
Yeah.
Because one of the series they lost, of course, they got swept. And they have not swept any of the series that they have won. They won four in a row, but it came winning the last two of one series and the first two of the next series. You do eventually have to put together the consistency where you sweep teams, where you make those big jumps, where you pick up three games to 500 in one series as opposed to one.
Correct.
Winning one at a time. You have to win a lot of series in a row when you take two out of three.
One win.
If you sweep a three-gamer or just one four-gamer, boom, you shoot right up.
You're off and running.
They have not done that at all the last season and this month of this season.
Yeah.
They're just not making those big leaps that other teams make. The Twins just made when they won 12 in a row.
And it's funny, too, because I think the mentality, and we have the mentality, and we preach the mentality, too, so yesterday, perfect example. Waldron goes out and gives up four. Mike Schilt says, what did they score? What did they answer back with? Two?
Three.
And then three. They
four,
answer
three.
Back with three. So in your mind, don't you have to say, this is winnable? The guys came to play, and they answered back.
I thought
back.
At the moment. When they came back fourth round, go, oh, they're going to come back and win this one.
But again, we don't take into account gnarly series against the Cubs, gnarlier series against the Dodgers, Joe on the IL today, Vasquez being called up, don't know what I'm going to get from him. Those are all the things that you have to factor in. If it's one game, Matt Waldron's out in the first.
Oh, it's a playoff game.
He's out in the first.
Yeah, yeah. You're not risking it.
No.
You're going for the win. Everything you can. And tomorrow, you'll worry about tomorrow.
Worry about tomorrow.
You can't just worry about tomorrow. You can't worry about today only over 162-game season.
You can't. They'll be done. You'll be done for. You will be done for. So, I know it's frustrating.
But, what Mike Schilt has professed from the very moment he got the job is that consistency.
Correct.
It's like, never give up an at-bat. Never give up a game. Always grinding to the end every single time.
It's different for a it's different for a player and it's different for a manager. So a player, I read that quote of, the most important pitch for a pitcher is the next one. And the most important swing for a hitter is the next one. That's it. And if that's the mentality your players have, great. Manager is not afforded that luxury. It's not. He's not afforded the luxury of saying, the most important inning is this one. Because you can't have that. Like, you cannot do that. You can't say, hey, man, we need nine outs here to sweep the series. Bobby fastballs, come on in. Give me nine.
Every game,
it cannot be a game seven for a manager. Now, a player, sure. Like, every AB counts. Every pitch counts. Execute every single time, and you're going to have good results.
One skill that the Padres have not had is just good timing. When it comes
timing
to
has been horrific.
It's funny because I see in the chat, Craig Elston has been pretty high on Matt Waldron just as a fifth starter. You don't need a miracle out of your fifth starter. Keep him in a few games. Give yourself a chance to win. If the Padres had better timing and they had scored a few runs in the games that Matt Waldron pitched well, he'd be around 500. You'd feel fine. But because the Padres have had bad timing, and when Waldron has pitched well, the offense has done nothing. When Waldron has not pitched as well, yeah, they scored a few runs. Four yesterday. Sucks, doesn't matter. Doesn't help you. Now the Padres are, what, 1-7 in Matt Waldron starts?
Yeah.
That's bad timing. That's There's bad plenty timing. Of other fifth starters with an ERA around 5 who have won 3 or 4 games because their teams have better timing. The Padres are like that couple that, you know, always thought they might get together, but, you know, she was with someone and then he was with someone and the timing just never seems to work out for the San Diego Padres. They need better timing on when they score and how they score and how they support their pitcher.
You saw it on Twitter on Saturday night after the offensive explosion was save some. No, you're not going to do that. You're not going to save some. No hitter's going to be like,
I'm going
to trade in a couple of these knocks for a couple of them. No. If they could, they would.
Oh,
they absolutely would. Guaranteed, Crony, tomorrow you're going to get 2 opportunities to drive in runs. You're going to be successful on both. You got to sacrifice this single up 12-1 in the 8th. Done. It doesn't work that way. So the timing does suck. The consistency has not been there. All of these things are correct. Run differential, I've never said it doesn't matter. It does. But you just have to take into account those stupid blowout games, you know, wins, losses, whatever. You have to factor that in.
Hate to do it, but put some pressure on you, Darvish, today. You got to get some innings out of him after Waldron didn't give you much yesterday. Get you off to a good start in the series as he goes up against Justin Steele, ostensibly the ace of the Cubs staff, although they seem to have multiple aces right now. 4:40 first pitch, and Steele is a lefty, which wouldn't be surprised if we saw Donovan Solano's Padres debut in the game today. Solano got called up before the game yesterday, and Eggie Rosario was sent back down to AAA El Paso. Did not get into the game, but I think they wanted him with the team so he could get on the plane with them to Chicago. Imanaga is also a lefty who's scheduled to go tomorrow. He's got a 0.78 ERA, so there's going to at least be the opportunity as a DH, or you may see him inserted in as an infielder at some point. Would not be surprised to see Donovan Solano. He had been hitting, from what we heard, pretty decently. Donnie Barrels, they call him, does seem to barrel the ball up well. We'll see if he can add to a Padres offense, which I said already has scored the second most runs in baseball. And now Arise, Solano, just gives him a couple of more veteran contributors to the point where you might even say, good offense right now in Major League. But this is a good offense on this team. Can they get the pitching to match it? That seems to be the question now going forward. Padres will have probably Randy Vasquez tomorrow, and then it'll be Dylan Cease against Hayden Wesnecki on Wednesday, and he's got a 0.54 ERA. So if you add up the ERAs of all the pitchers in this series, right around 3 total. That's a tough trio that you got to face at Wrigley Field this week. And then you get home, and you got the Dodgers for 3 when you come back home on Friday. Tough week.
So this is Steele's first start back. Since he got a hamstring injury on opening day, their offense is good. Are they hurt? Are they banged up?
Bellinger's been out, and Suzuki's been out, I think, too.
I just saw a note that they're running bases right now. I don't know what that means for this series. Hopefully both of those guys are out for this entire series.
Go ahead. Give it a couple more days just to be safe, right?
And you still have your work cut out for you because they still have guys that can put the ball in play. So, yeah, man, these games feel huge right now. They feel huge in May because, well, let's be honest, they are. These games are huge right now for the San Diego Padres to decide what kind of team they're going to be. And again, I will say it again, and I believe it. 3-3 this week would be outstanding. Outstanding against the Cubs and the Dodgers.
Yeah, looking at lineup speculation. Honestly, Mike Shildt has so many options now with where he can put guys in the infield and who he uses as the DH. I'd hate to speculate, but yeah, I'd imagine that you'll see the same top with Arias, Tatis, Cronenworth, Manny, Profar, and then probably Xander, you know, and then some combination of Merrill, Solano, and Kim in the bottom 3 of the order would be my guess. And who's the DH? Who's playing in the field? I don't know. It'll probably be who's feeling it, who needs a day, who likes to get off their feet. But that'll be for the manager to decide. We should know here probably during the Annie and Elston show, they'll get a lineup for the game. They'll be able to bring that to you around lunchtime today for the 4:40 start.
Can't wait, man. Every game just feels so huge right now. And getting Arias in, can't wait to see what he does off of Steele. Be nice to welcome Steele back with a nice, sharp single through the 5-5 hole, and let's get this thing going.
I have a lot of confidence that he can get that done.
So do I. So do I. It feels good. Let it feel good for a while.
Good start to the week. Great job by the Tier 1s. Great job by our executive producer and imaging director, Paul Reindl. Really good Reindl report today. That's it for us. We'll be back at 6 a.m. tomorrow for four more hours. For Stephen Woods, I'm Ben Higgins. Have a great rest of your Monday from all of us at San Diego's number one sports station, 97.3 The Fan. So long, everybody. This hour, Ben Woods, brought to you by the Kraft Taco in Sorrento Valley. Kraft Taco has some of the best quality tacos in all of San Diego. Go to thecrafttaco.com. Take a look at there today, thecrafttaco.com. I received a lot of tweets and comments over the weekend about run differential, but I stayed silent through the entire weekend.
Good for
I'm not going down that road again much. Explain when we come back after traffic here on 97.3 The Fan.
They're wearing you out for last year's
I think people misunderstand that I'm rooting for run differential. I could care less what the team's run differential is.
Couldn't you?
I want them to win games. Last year...
You really liked the run.
Last year, I thought the run differential was... I thought the run differential was going to show you that this is a better team and they are eventually going to find their level, as most teams do. And they were going to eventually, you know, be several games above 500
but
to make the playoffs.
You're such a math guy.
Just because it didn't happen doesn't mean true.
But you're such a math guy. And you're so smart. That's why I wanted to hit you over the head with a frying pan last year, because you would come in and argue, but they're plus 20. I'm like, they scored 14 runs in one game. Then they scored 9. The win is worth the same amount if you win by one or if you win by 30.
You are correct.
You only get one credit for one win.
But ultimately...
Me over to Beverage. Bong!
What's the best way to evaluate an offense in baseball?
Wins and losses, honestly. That's what I've come up with.
But no, just offense.
Last year broke me,
just
too.
Just offense. Of all the stats, you got batting average,
right.
OBP, slugging
run
percentage,
scored,
OPS.
Run score. I know.
Isn't that the most important stat you can put up as an offense? Doesn't matter how you get them. You just need to get them, because the more runs you score, the more likely you are to win a game. Similarly, for a pitching staff, the most important stat is runs allowed.
Yeah.
It's not ERA. You know that. Unearned runs count against you just as much.
Correct.
So as a team, you're trying to prevent as many runs as possible while scoring as many runs as possible.
But if you're sitting at 500 and you've got a plus 42 run differential, are you a good team or a bad team? You're a 500 team. That's what you are. You're a little bit of both, because you have to take into account the feast or famine, which you weren't last year.
And we are a little bit going down that road again.
We are.
Because once again, now after the addition of Luis Arraez, obviously the Padres had a good weekend. They have scored the second most runs in baseball this year. 187 runs.
Yeah.
That is second only to the Los Angeles Dodgers, who have scored 197 runs. The offense has been good. And the pitching, while it hasn't been nearly as good, they're more toward the middle to bottom half of baseball in 176 runs allowed. Their run differential of plus 11 tells you they should be a couple of games above 500, not a game below 500
Correct.
At this point.
Yeah,
but
that's how you feel.
Here we are again, and they are once again not quite performing up to the level of what their offense and defense slash pitching say they should be performing up to. Last year, we kind of blamed Bob Melvin as the manager. They're not winning one-run games. This year, they're not nearly as bad as they were. I think, their one-run game record this year is, at this point, it's been a while, 3-4 in one-run games and 1-0 in extra inning games. Not like last year when they were abysmally bad in those games. They've been okay in the close games. They've had a couple of games where they've blown people out. They haven't gotten blown out a lot. I think yesterday, was that the worst loss they've suffered all year?
I think it was.
By seven runs was probably the biggest margin of defeat that they've had all season long. They don't get blown out much. They do occasionally erupt on the other teams, and they've done okay in close games. To me, that tells you they should be a winning team. Somehow they're not still.
Now, the crazy thing is, you look at Oakland, right? So Oakland is sitting with a minus 23 run differential, Benny, and they are 17-18. Which is insane. We're 18-19. You basically have the exact same winning percentage as the Oakland Athletics right now. Again, we're going to go down that road of I don't know what to make of this team.
I mean, the Twins with a essentially the same run differential as the Padres, they're plus 13. They're five games above 500.
Correct.
There's definitely ways to maximize your runs scored and your runs given up. And the Padres have not done that very well season plus.
Correct. And I just think it's such a tired thing, but just consistency. It's just consistency.
I think that is important.
It is.
The Padres have won. So they've played 12 series now this year.
Yeah.
After winning two out of three from the Arizona Diamondbacks, they've won five series. They've lost four series, and they've split three series. So they have a winning series record. Mike Schilt told us last week, it doesn't matter. Winning streaks don't matter. You just win series. Yeah. And if you win more series than you lose, you're going to have a winning record. Well, here we are. The Padres have won more series than they've lost.
That's correct.
And they still have a losing record.
Yeah.
Because one of the series they lost, of course, they got swept. And they have not swept any of the series that they have won. They won four in a row, but it came winning the last two of one series and the first two of the next series. You do eventually have to put together the consistency where you sweep teams, where you make those big jumps,
yeah,
where you pick up three games to 500 in one series as opposed to one.
Correct.
Winning one at a time. You have to win a lot of series in a row when you take two out of three.
One win. Yeah.
If you sweep a three-gamer or just one four-gamer, boom, you shoot right up.
You're off and running.
They have not done that at all the last season and this month of this season.
Yeah.
They're just not making those big leaps that other teams make. The Twins just made when they won 12 in a row.
You know, it's funny, too, because I think the mentality, and we have the mentality, we preach the mentality, too, of, so yesterday, perfect example. Waldron goes out and gives up four. Mike Schilt says, what did they score? What did they answer back with? Two?
Three.
And then three. They answer back with three. So in your mind, don't you have to say, this is winnable? The guys came to play, and they answered back.
I thought at the moment, when they came back 4-3, I'd go, oh, they're going to come back and win this one.
We don't take into account gnarly series against the Cubs, gnarlier series against the Dodgers, Joe on the IL today, Vasquez being called up, don't know what I'm going to get from him. Those are all the things that you have to factor in. If it's one game, Matt Waldron's out in the first.
No, it's a playoff game.
He's out in the first.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You're not risking it.
No.
You're going for the win. Everything you can. And tomorrow, you'll worry about tomorrow.
Worry about tomorrow.
You can't just worry about tomorrow. You can't worry about today only over 162-game season.
You can't. They'll be done. You'll be done for. You will be done for. So, I know it's frustrating.
But, you know, what Mike Schilt has professed from the very moment he got the job is that consistency.
Correct.
It's like, never give up an at-bat. Never give up a game. Always grinding to the end every single time.
It's different for it's different for a player and it's different for a manager. So a player, I read that quote of, the most important pitch for a pitcher is the next one. And the most important swing for a hitter is the next one. That's it. And if that's the mentality your players have, great. Manager is not afforded that luxury. It's not. He's not afforded the luxury of saying, the most important inning is this one. Because you can't have that. Like, you cannot do that. You can't say, hey, man, we need nine outs here to sweep the series. Bobby fastballs, come on in. Give me nine.
Every game,
it cannot be a game seven for a manager. Now, a player, sure. Like, every AB counts. Every pitch counts. Execute every single time, and you're going to have good results.
One skill that the Padres have not had is just good timing. When it comes
timing
to
has been horrific.
It's funny because I see in the chat, you know, Craig Elston has been pretty high on Matt Waldron just as a fifth starter. You don't need a miracle out of your fifth starter. Keep him in a few games. Give yourself a chance to win. If the Padres had better timing and they had scored a few runs in the games that Matt Waldron pitched well, he'd be around 500. You'd feel fine. But because the Padres have had bad timing, and when Waldron has pitched well, the offense has done nothing. When Waldron has not pitched as well, yeah, they scored a few runs. Four yesterday.
Sucks,
doesn't
man.
Matter. Doesn't help you. Now the Padres are what? 1-7 in Matt Waldron starts?
Yeah.
That's bad timing.
That's
There's
bad
plenty
timing.
Of other fifth starters with an ERA around 5 who have won three or four games because their teams have better timing. The Padres are like that couple that, you know, always thought they might get together, but, you know, she was with someone and then he was with someone and the timing just never seems to work out for the San Diego Padres. They need better timing on when they score and how they score and how they support their pitcher.
You saw it on Twitter on Saturday night after the offensive explosion was save some. Now you're not going to do that. You're not going to save some. No hitter's going to be like,
you can't bank
I'm going to trade in a couple of these knocks for a couple of them. No. If they, hey, by the way, If they could, they would.
Oh,
they absolutely would. If they, guarantee, Crony, tomorrow you're going to get two opportunities to drive in runs. You're going to be successful on both. You got to sacrifice this single up 12-1 in the eighth. Done. It doesn't work that way. So the timing does suck. The consistency has not been there. All of these things are correct. Run differential, I've never said it doesn't matter. It does. But you just have to take into account those stupid blowout games, you know, wins, losses, whatever. You have to factor that in.
Hate to do it, but put some pressure on you, Darvish, today. You got to get some innings out of him after Waldron didn't give you much yesterday. Get you off to a good start in the series as he goes up against Justin Steele, ostensibly the ace of the Cubs staff, although they seem to have multiple aces right now. 4:40 first pitch, and Steele is a lefty, which wouldn't be surprised if we saw Donovan Solano's Padres debut in the game today. Solano got called up before the game yesterday, and Eggy Rosario was sent back down to AAA El Paso. Did not get into the game, but I think they wanted him with the team so he could get on the plane with them to Chicago. Imanaga is also a lefty who's scheduled to go tomorrow. He's got a 0.78 ERA, so there's going to at least be the opportunity as a DH, or you may see him inserted in as an infielder at some point. Would not be surprised to see Donovan Solano. He had been hitting, from what we heard, pretty decently. Donnie Barrels, they call him, does seem to barrel the ball up well. We'll see if he can add to a Padres offense, which I said already has scored the second most runs in baseball. And now Arraez, Solano, just gives him a couple of more veteran contributors to the point where you might even say, good offense right now in Major League. But this is a good offense on this team. Can they get the pitching to match it? That seems to be the question now going forward. Padres will have probably Randy Vasquez tomorrow, and then it'll be Dylan Cease against Hayden Wesnecki on Wednesday, and he's got a 0.54 ERA. So if you add up the ERAs of all the pitchers in this series, right around 3 total. That's a tough trio that you got to face at Wrigley Field this week. And then you get home and you got the Dodgers for 3 when you come back home on Friday. Tough week.
So this is Steele's first start back since he got a hamstring injury on opening day. Their offense is good. Are they hurt? Are they banged up?
Bellinger's been out, and Suzuki's been out, I think, too.
I just saw a note that they're running bases right now. I don't know what that means for this series. Hopefully both of those guys are out for this entire series.
Go ahead. Give it a couple more days just to be safe, right?
And you still have your work cut out for you because they still have guys that can put the ball in play. So, yeah, man, look. These games feel huge right now. They feel huge in May because, well, let's be honest, they are. These games are huge right now for the San Diego Padres to decide what kind of team they're going to be. And again, I will say it again, and I believe it. 3-3 this week would be outstanding. Outstanding against the Cubs and the Dodgers.
Yeah, looking at lineup speculation. Honestly, Mike Shildt has so many options now with where he can put guys in the infield and who he uses as the DH. I'd hate to speculate, but yeah, I'd imagine that you'll see the same top with Arraez, Tatis, Cronenworth, Manny, Profar, and then probably Xander, you know, and then some combination of Merrill, Solano, and Kim in the bottom three of the order would be my guess. And who's the DH? Who's playing in the field? I don't know. It'll probably be who's feeling it, who needs a day, who likes to get off their feet. But that'll be for the manager to decide. We should know here in probably during the Annie and Elston show, they'll get a lineup for the game. They'll be able to bring that to you around lunchtime today for the 4:40 start.
Can't wait, man. Every game just feels so huge right now. And getting Arraez in, can't wait to see what he does off of Steele. Be nice to welcome Steele back with a nice, sharp single to through the 5-5 hole, and let's get this thing going.
I have
going.
A lot of confidence that he can get that done.
So do I. It feels good. Let it feel good for a while.
Good start to the week. Great job by the Tier 1s. Great job by our executive producer and imaging director, Paul Reindl. Really good Reindl report today. That's it for us. We'll be back at 6 a.m. tomorrow for 4 more hours. For Stephen Woods, I'm Ben Higgins. Have a great rest of your Monday from all of us at San Diego's number one sports station, 97.3 The Fan. So long, everybody.